Welcome to the podcast of this Brecan information session. Information sessions are recorded at the Brecan Resource Centre and can be borrowed in CD format from the Resource Library. Sessions are copyrighted and are for personal home use only. If you would like to know more about this and other sessions, please contact Brecan on 1300 781 500. We hope you enjoy this podcast.
Welcome to Volume 82 in the Brecan What's On Information Sessions, a series of talks produced for people with gynecological or breast cancer, their families and friends. This session was recorded on the 17th of October 2012 at the Queen Victoria Women's Centre, located in Melbourne's CBD. Many people experience changes to intimate and sexual aspect of their lives after a cancer diagnosis and treatment. In a fun, frank and sensitive style, Sandra Wilson, cancer nurse specialist from the Cancer Council Victoria, discusses practical strategies to assist us to communicate about sexuality and to build sexual confidence and enhance intimate relationships after cancer. We hope you enjoy this session.
Hi. thank you so much for coming to the session. It is going to be a lot of fun. As you can see on the chairs, there's bowlers. Feel free to put them on. I love talking about sexuality, so much so I think I drive my housemates nuts. They say I drive them nuts, but it's actually they don't care, they get tips, so they're fine. But I think they're thinking, oh, we should stop talking about it, go ahead and do it. So as we go along, the first part of the presentation, we kind of look a little bit about what sexuality is, really, and what it is to, what it's defined as and how it's seen, sort of in the world. So as you can see from this picture, we are bombarded by often unrealistic images of what sexuality is. These ladies seem to be struggling to get into the car doors for some reason, or can't find them. And be assured that she is wearing underwear, although you can't really tell in that shot. We are seen, sexuality is often seen as just like this perfect youthful thing, great legs, great skin, great hair, it's all about being young and perfect is often how it's portrayed to us. I mean, even in this image, it's about youth, it's about being hairless apparently, it's about no scars, no illness, no nothing. And so they're the kind of images that we think define sexuality or what it is to be sexual. Although some cultures do actually, let us know that people can be all shapes and sizes and still be, sexual as well, and celebrate sexuality. I have no idea if any of you have ever had a coffee experience like this. If you have, I would like to know about it in the break. this is the thing, this is how it's sort of set up, that this is how we're living the dream, is if this is what is happening for us. So. But I don't know, for me, I know that this is not my experience, so we're going to have a little bit of a look at what it is, what sexuality actually is. It's so much more than sexual intercourse or sexual dysfunction. It's, it's so much more than just being physical with somebody. It actually, the World Health Organization gives us a great definition of sexuality. Sexuality is a central aspect of being human. We're all born sexual beings, basically, and for most people, intimacy and sexuality is a huge part of our existence. So it's a central aspect of being human throughout life, and it does encompass sex, but it also encompasses gender identities, roles, sexual orientation, eroticism, pleasure, intimacy and reproduction, and it's experienced through a multitude of ways. So it's in our thoughts, our fantasies, our desires, our beliefs, our values, behaviours, practices, roles, relationships. It changes in different age groups. The expression of it will change in different age groups, in different cultures. So it's a huge, huge area. And really, I just put that up there so that it really gives you that picture that it's so much more than what we often get bombarded with images or what our actual experience actually is about sexuality. So, with a cancer diagnosis, as many of you would know, we definitely know just even in normally with a cancer diagnosis, we get just normal reactions to the diagnosis. Anxiety and depression, grief and loss, the fear of recurrence, loss of time from work, relationships change, fertility can be challenged, our images can change. And so when you look at that sort of list of emotions that are challenged directly, you know, as soon as you get a cancer diagnosis, then you add on top of that, how does that actually affect people's sexuality, how they see themselves, who they are, how they relate to the people who are around them. It's a huge, huge impact. And so this is just to give you sort of a bit of an example of what we know from some of the research as well. And I won't spend too long here, but just to let you know, this was a study from 2011 where 2,210 women with breast cancer were surveyed. 88% of the women reported changes with their sexual well-being. Feeling desirable, 73% of women felt that they lost that. Intimacy changed for 60%. The frequency of sex in their relationships for 78%. Energy for sex, interest in sex. So huge impact. But the interesting part of it is that only 25% of that was discussed with a health professional. And we'll talk a little bit about why that is as well. And this is also about partners as well, the impact of a cancer diagnosis on partners. Caring for a person with cancer, that, you know, 76% of partners of someone who was diagnosed with a non-reproductive cancer, and 84% of partners with a diagnosed with reproductive cancer reported an impact on their sexual relationship. So it's a huge impact. The decrease, in frequency of sex and intimacy. Often lots of other issues that are coming up with that, people feeling exhausted from their treatment, seeing the partner as a patient, so roles change as well. Sometimes the partner can feel like, you know, they're now actually in charge of medications or they're in charge of helping the person to shower, so you get this change in the way the relationship actually works. There can be sadness and anger and self-blame and all kinds of emotions that come up for the partner as well. And when I put there, renegotiation is reported by only about 19% of women and 48% of men. By renegotiation, what they were talking about was actually changing the way that the relationship works, kind of the way they actually expressed their sexuality and intimacy to each other. So looking at other ways, you know, introducing toys or introducing self-pleasure or other things that actually could change the relationship in some way. So it's actually not a huge percent of people that feel comfortable to actually renegotiate the ground. So we're going to have a bit of a look at how you might sort of do that as well. And just going back to that comment about the health professionals, this was from a study Amanda Horden did, who worked for Cancer Council. She was our sex guru, as we called her, did her PhD in communicating around cancer and sexuality. And the health professionals said, you know, if it was important to the patient, they'd actually bring it up with me. And the patient said, if the doctor wanted to tell me, then they'd tell me. So basically the summary was no one was talking about it. That's how it worked. So, and that may be a lot of your experience as well. So, and these were just some of the things that came up that people were desperately wanting to ask. You know, am I normal? I put on 30 kilos. I look completely different to what I did before my cancer treatment. Self-esteem has just plummeted. And learning that it was about the medication, but just those wanting to ask those questions and know if there's things that can be done about it as well. And same for in this quote about the prosthesis making her feel more confident on the outside, but at night taking it off and seeing how things really were as well. And I really like this quote about a 70-year-old person wanting to discuss sex with their doctor, but not feeling that they could do that, that it was all a bit of a joke. You know, maybe a 70-year-old, why would they want to be asking that question? So there's that ageism comes into the question as well. So And also this, I really love this quote too, just knowing that there are people out there that you can actually talk to who have walked that path. We know that actually being able to talk with others about the experience just has a huge impact. But if no one's talking about it, how do you access these services and how do you actually learn tips and ways of actually managing the issue of sexuality? So, where do you go? Everyone's curious, as you can see in this picture. You know, everyone's curious. And it's interesting because 30 to 40% of people, even without a cancer diagnosis or an illness, have issues with their sexual relationships and their sexuality. So then when you add cancer onto that, it raises a whole next level of questions and ways of managing. So. So I really like that picture because it is, we're all curious about, you know, how we can do things better and how we can experience things better. So just to start off with, it's helpful to know that actually as women age, normally we get changes. There's changes with orgasm changes, there's changes with the lining of the vagina gets thinner naturally, there's changes with the labia, there's changes with the sensitivity of the clitoris, all those kind of things. So we're already, as women, as we age, are naturally getting changes as well. So, but the challenge, of course, and as you can see there, with the natural ageing process, for women who are menopausal, over 50% will express that they get vaginal dryness, the thinning of the vagina, which then, of course, in turn makes there's irritation there, and then people report painful intercourse as well. So it's a tough gig because women are naturally aging; you are naturally getting changes anyway. And then, of course, you add on top of that the treatment effects that that can come with cancer treatments as well. So, and there's just, you know, sort of, a list there, and I'm sure there'd be others that you would easily add to that list as well. There's the altered body image from surgery, maybe having a mastectomy, losing a breast, hysterectomy. There's also body hair loss from chemotherapy as well, fluid retention from treatments. There's been immunosuppressed. That can make people particularly fatigued when they're immunosuppressed from their chemotherapy. There's mouth ulcerations and affects the dryness in the mouth and things like that, so that can affect how people are able to kiss too. And just the emotional side of it as well, the grieving from maybe losing a breast or losing, you know, a role in a workplace, or it can be anything. Confronting own mortality as well can be a big issue. And then, as mentioned before, the relationship and role changes and reprioritising life issues is a big thing that comes up when people are challenged with a cancer diagnosis as well. So that's just kind of, when you put all those things together, often the last thing on anyone's mind is their sexuality or sex and that's okay. It's good to know, A, that this is normal, you know, people experience this when they are diagnosed with cancer, they experience this when they're having their treatments and their surgery, and that is normal. And often what we notice is, or what we know, is that when people are in the midst of their treatment, a lot of people will say, the last thing on my mind is having sex or being intimate, or all I want to focus on is getting well and getting through the treatment. And that's okay. You know, it's important to be able to acknowledge that and then actually say, you know what, this is, it's all right to do that. Often after the treatment finishes, that's often when the emotions can then come up. People have time then to actually think about, well, what is the sort of emotions there for me, either around the diagnosis, but also around how it has actually affected sexuality and how they see themselves. So. So with chemotherapy, the chemotherapy effects can affect what we call the androgen level, one of the hormone levels, but you know that often affects people's libido, their desire towards sex. It can reduce arousal, it can lower mood elevation, and it can increase fatigue. And I don't know whether anyone's you know, is happy to pop up the hand back chemo brain. That's a big, it's a big thing that we get calls on the helpline about at the Cancer Council, is people with this chemo brain. It drives them crazy. It's really frustrating. You know, sort of losing memory towards things, and it's tiring, and very, very frustrating. So, you know, that's just an example of what can happen with the chemotherapy. And then there's also fertility issues that come up as well. So with chemotherapy, the type of the drug, the how many doses that you have, the duration of the treatment, the age of the person having the treatment, the length of time that's lapsed since the last treatment, all of those factors can come together to affect someone's fertility. And so that can be a huge, huge impact on women, you know, having that maybe taken away from them, the opportunity to have children or going to early menopause. So all of this comes into effect to actually really impact how people see themselves. There can be a real loss of identity that happens within this process. And of course, drug-induced menopause, it all sounds fun, doesn't it? I feel like I'm setting you up with all these really, you know, we'll get to the fun stuff as well. But, you know, just, I guess the importance of this, you know, part of the presentation, the physical side of things, is sometimes it's not talked about, and people can really feel like they're actually going through things on their own as well, these physical changes. So, with menopause, these are actually symptoms of menopause anyway, but what we do know is that for people who have chemotherapy-induced menopause or treatment-induced menopause, often the side effects are worse. The symptoms can be worse. So, so vaginal dryness, there can be vaginal discharge, the reduced libido or desire towards sex, mood swings, weight gain. There's not hard evidence about the weight gain, but there's a lot of anecdotal evidence about the weight gain. Most people, say that absolutely weight gain was an issue. Hot flushes and sweats that can be really intense as well. And often the symptoms will be worse in young women because they've been forced into menopause as well. So let's talk a little bit about managing vaginal dryness. A lot of the first part we chat through sort of managing some of the physical symptoms around what's lubed moves. So I don't know whether people are familiar with lubrications, and so I've actually brought some along as an example, and I'm going to pass them around. This one is the PER one, which is the second one there. So it's a silicone-based lubrication. What it means is that it really stays lubricated for a long period of time. So, and it can be reactivated with saliva as well. You can use it as a hand moisturiser if you want to. It does go around, like goes around our office for that purpose as well. But it's really good to actually have a feel of stuff, see whether you actually like it. Yeah, most people feel it and just go, oh, okay, it's a bit of all right. So, put it on and have a feel of it. There is actually two versions. There's one that's silicone-based and there's one that's water-based as well. So I'll just pass it around. The one in the blue markings is water-based, just in case people don't. It's good though, the water-based one, you'll feel the difference between the two. The silicone really, you know, sort of, you can feel that it's going to last, basically. Whereas the water-based one is designed to sort of dissolve, basically, and dissolve fairly quickly. So. So managing vaginal dryness, lubrication is so important, so, so important. We actually now sell that at Cancer Council, that PER one, at quite a discounted price, so there's information sheets about that at the back too. So if you do like it, so it's worth feeling and having a play with the lubrication. So, and there's a few others there. You'll notice in your goodie bags actually the silk. The silk lubrication, which is water-based. Some people want all-natural product, you know, and that's absolutely fine. And the silk one, there's a sample of it in your little black bag as well, which is actually made from kiwi fruits. So it's pip-free, as my boss used to say. She said, don't worry about that. Don't eat it. But it is water-based. And, so that's the silk one, and many people are familiar with the kiwi jelly. That you can buy over the counter. AstroGlide, that apparently used to be used on something to do with spaceships and getting the joints to. So as my previous boss used to say, she said if you can get a spaceship into the sky, it can certainly last all night, hopefully. So it's a water-based lube as well. So and then you can get the tampon versions too. So they would look a little bit similar to this. This is a little different brand, but the Lubrin tampons, it just means that you're able to insert the lubrication as well, so which some people might prefer. They might just might prefer that sort of mechanism. And the other thing too is washing, so using sorbolene, things that aren't going to dry out the vaginal area as well is really important too. And this, just to sort of clarify the difference as well, because sometimes it can get a little bit confusing with all the products and stuff. So that one, of course, is a lubrication. So that really is for either sexual intercourse or foreplay. You can use the silicone-based one as a bit of a massage oil, things like that. So that really is for sort of intercourse or that or foreplay. The vaginal moisturisers are more for actually, not so much for lubrication, they are actually to moisturise the lining of the vagina, because as we naturally age, but also through the effects of treatment and so on, when the vaginal thinning actually occurs, that, as mentioned before, can be when you get the abrasion, and women might complain of pain when they're having intercourse. So what the vaginal moisturisers do is actually plump the lining of the vagina, and this is the non-hormonal versions of that. So the Replenze, which is actually what I was showing you there before, is so it's done 3 times a week for 3 months, and actually plumps the lining so that then there's less likely to get that irritation. So these are over-the-counter stuff as well, no sort of special prescriptions. And the other thing is vitamin E capsules. I don't know whether anyone's ever heard of vitamin E capsules, using that for vaginal moisturisation. You actually just break the vitamin E capsule and pour the oil out, and actually it can actually go into the vagina and create moisturisation. The only disadvantage is that it can be a bit messy. So yeah, so that's the downside of that one. But it's good to know, though.
Yeah. Sorry, getting back to the plans. Yeah. 3 times a week for 3 months.
You can, but it should give sort of enough effect for a period of time after using it for the 3 months. Yeah, so you might find that and it would work. It'd be quite individual as to, but you can actually use it more than that. Absolutely. So women would choose to actually keep it ongoing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know how much it costs?
It is. That was the only thing that we learnt on the helpline too, was the complaint was it's expensive.
It is, yeah.
A lot of these products, or some of them I should say, can be. And that was why we really fought to try and get the PER one via the helpline, so that we can sell it at cost price.
Can you use more than one type?
Absolutely.
Use the Replenze and the vitamin E capsule, a different one every day, or whatever.
Because one thing will work for one person that won't work for another. And we notice that a lot on the helpline. People will say, yeah, no, I tried that, terrible. But this was great for me. Or, yeah. And some people don't like, they actually prefer the water-based ones because they actually prefer the friction when they're having intercourse, as opposed to the silicone one, which actually gives a bit more glide. So yeah, so there's all those different things too. It's very individual as to how people want to use them.
They've all got different texture for one on the other one, another one.
They're really different, aren't they? Very different texture as to how they'll feel. Yeah. So This one, the vaginal estrogen is, so when we're talking about the non-hormonal vaginal moisturisers, they plump the lining of the vagina, but the only way to actually repair the lining of the vagina is through the use of estrogen. So this is fairly controversial, of course, particularly for women with breast cancer or hormone-positive breast cancer. The jury is out, the literature goes one way or the other way, and often women will get quite conflicting advice from their oncologists or the doctors on their treating team saying, absolutely no way are you using that. Or others will be a little bit more flexible. So it's a conversation worth having with, you know, your oncologist or your doctor about whether there is any possibility of using using a hormone-based estrogen cream, basically, or treatment to actually repair the lining of the vagina. So the jury's out because, you know, it varies how much they, you know, whether there's any actual uptake of the estrogen. There might be a little bit into the bloodstream, and so women who have a hormone receptive breast cancer, is that going to be a problem? So it is a conversation worth having, because quality of life is, you know, a lot of women now with breast cancer are living much, much longer. And so quality of life is, you know, it's important. And so it's a really important conversation to have around that. And this is just a little bit, I'm not sure whether anyone here is actively having chemotherapy at the moment, so I just thought I'd put this in anyway. Because when you're having chemotherapy, you can have sex. If you want to, if people are in the mood and they want to do that, that's okay. The recommendations are that condoms are used for the first 48 hours. And that's, again, there's just that borderline, they're not really sure, so it's a protective thing. So what we know about chemotherapy is it generally takes about 48 hours to get out of the system. And there's a little bit, and when I say get out of the system, it usually it's in the body fluids. So there's a little bit of unsurety about how much sits in sperm or the fluids that line the vagina. So that's why that precaution is there for 48 hours. Has anyone ever heard of a dental dam? Yeah, no? I did bring one as an example. And this is for people, you know, if they're wanting to have oral sex and it's just straight after the chemotherapy time. This is an education. The first time I ever saw one of these, I had no idea that they existed. But this is a dental dam. And so it can actually be put over the vaginal area and used for oral sex and protection. So these are impermeable to STDs and things like that. And so people have advised us that when they use them, they said, oh, whenever you're talking about them, make sure people know never to use glad wrap, because it's permeable. I said, I don't know whether people are going to put glad wrap down there and we'll actually wear that out. But yeah, so that's what dental dams are. As well, so.
And where do you get those from?
These ones, you can actually get them, my understanding is you can actually get them from most chemists. Yeah, the dental dams. So I can double check on that though. So, because we've had these for a while, so if anything's changed. But yeah, so they're pretty easily accessible as well. Radiotherapy as well, you know, naturally has an effect on the vaginal area, and so for a lot of women who are having radiotherapy for a gynecological cancer, there can actually be tenderness and irritation that occurs there. So it can affect the lining of the vagina, and so you can get you can get narrowing first of all, but you can also get scarring on the vagina. So that means that after the radiotherapy, there's more of a risk that the vagina will narrow and you can actually get adhesions happening. And and there can be, as it says there, a shortening of the vagina as well. But for women who do have surgery for gynecological cancers, there can be a shortening of the vagina too in that setting as well. So fatigue comes with chemotherapy and radiotherapy. I imagine most people here, who, if you've had treatment, will be able to put your hand up and say, yeah, the tiredness is unbelievable. And that can last for, you know, it doesn't necessarily just go once treatment's finished. It can be, you know, quite some time. That will vary from person to person as to how long that fatigue will take to actually start to resolve itself. But also to say that there's a myth that you might be radioactive when you have radiotherapy. It's a common call that we get on the helpline that people might be radioactive, but it's actually not true. So it's good to know that as well. So again, people who are having radiotherapy, if they want to be having intercourse, they can do that. So I put that one up there too, naturally, because we are talking about gynecological cancers, but there are ways of treating this, and so a lot of women who are having radiotherapy for gynae cancers are given what they call a dilator. I don't know whether anyone's seen it, but it literally looks like a long tube, and they come in various sizes. It's not one size fits all for women. So women are actually prescribed a dilator to actually use at various intervals during their treatment, and then for various intervals after their treatment, and really for the rest of their lives, the dilators are used in that setting as well. But one of the doctors at the Royal Women's, he just said, well, how dull that we, you know, prescribe these dilators. He said, why don't you just prescribe a vibrator? It's far more fun, and it does exactly the same thing. So, you know, I thought, that's perfect. It's just like, yeah. He said, dilators look so clinical. He said, you know, get people onto, vibrators, and so that, yes, they have to do the dilation as part of the treatment, and to get women to think about it as part of their treatment. He said, but have fun while they're doing it. So, pelvic floor exercises. Does everyone do their pelvic floor exercises? Yeah, no, I would also put my hand up to say no to that one. It's very easily forgotten, but it's actually an amazing help when it comes to sort of sexual activity. Well, it's, you know, not even just that. As it says there, the muscle tone, it means that women can actually help get stronger orgasms from having better muscle tone. It actually encourages, vaginal lubrication as well. And continence, that's a big, you know, that's often where it's actually talked about, mainly in the setting of continence. If you can get really strong pelvic floor, that you can actually help manage continence as well. So, and then there's increased blood flow, which is, as mentioned before, can actually enhance the orgasm as well. So pelvic floor exercises, there's some great stuff on them in some of the books and things, but there's a device for everything. Tell you what, I don't know whether anyone's ever seen these. They're actually weighted, little weighted balls that can actually be inserted into the vagina, and it forces the pelvic floor to hang on to them. And so you can actually use them for, you might be doing vacuuming, or you might be doing an exercise class or whatever. And you pop these in beforehand, and it actually, it forces the pelvic floor to hold on to them. So if anyone wants to have a feel of them, they're quite weird. I'll send them around.
You wouldn't want to relax.
No. You can actually feel the weight in them. And we confess, the girls around the office have tried them. They work very well. So, but it's really, we're all about try before we try and, get other people to try. But, you'll feel, and you can actually get modified versions of them as well, where you can actually adjust the weights in them. So you can actually just use one, and then as your pelvic floor gets stronger and stronger, you can actually increase the weight in them, so they're a bit more fancy. So like I said, there's devices for everything. And I'm very conscious that a lot of the conversation around sexuality and sex often gets put into a context of people being couples, and it's so important, it's important for me to talk about it as well, but to really validate that you don't have to be in a relationship to value your own sexuality, to feel sexual, to be intimate, and that's, particularly why that slide's there, but as we go through the rest of the presentation, there's a lot of tips around how, you know, for both for couples, for single people, for same-sex relationships, how you know, you can feel sexual and sensual. But yeah, it's just important to recognise that you don't have to be in a couple to actually, you know, think about your sexuality, to want to know more about it, to, you know, all those kind of things. So, and just to acknowledge too that starting relationships after a cancer diagnosis for a single person can be really daunting, so daunting, and that's really normal. And for some people, they might actually say, you know what, in the short term, I don't want to even go there. It's, you know, or I may not ever want to go there. And it's actually also being able to say that that's okay if people don't want to do that. But certainly I would encourage people who are single to, if that is the case, to really explore why that is the case, you know, because sometimes we put pressures on ourselves or things and we think, oh, it's just easier to actually pop that in a box and not actually work through that. And so, you know, in that sense, people can feel that they're actually shortchanging themselves. But being single, there can be a lot of exploration that goes on around sexuality and getting comfortable with, you know, what may be a new body because a breast is missing or they've had a hysterectomy or whatever it might be. So we'll talk through some of the tips around that, but as we go through. And as I mentioned, you know, for same-sex relationships, often we live in a very heterosexual world. That's often where a lot of the conversations sit. I put this in here in the sense that just to encourage people who are in a same-sex relationship to be confident about that with your health professional as well. Actually bringing that person maybe with you to appointments and to so that the team who are involved in your care can acknowledge that this is the important person to you. This is the person that is your partner. And not to feel sort of needing to hide that, because what we do know is often that can be the case. People feel that they need to actually hide that because we do tend to define things through a heterosexual lens. So we really encourage people to actually be open with their health professionals, and a lot of the issues that come up around sexuality will be the same for a same-sex couple as they will be for a heterosexual couple. But that it's important to feel confident to sort of talk about that and acknowledge and validate who your partner is and the health team to know that and that it's an open discussion. And you know, the helpline can be really helpful in helping people work through that too if it is a difficult situation. Sort of putting together questions or things for doctors and ways around tackling, actually sharing that. Is there any questions or comments thus far? I know the presentation focuses a lot on the physical side of things thus far, but is there any sort of burning questions that have come up for people thus far, or anything that hasn't sort of been addressed around that physical side of things as well? No? Awesome. No worries. Does anyone want to stand and stretch, or you're all okay? Excellent. So what is sensuality? So, you know, as I mentioned, talk through a lot about the physical things, because that's often people's immediate experience, or it's their immediate question around their treatment and what comes up for them. But this is a huge area. Sensuality is for everybody. Coupled, not coupled, and this is part of the way, or it is, you know, a huge part of the way that we feel good about ourselves, and also it's what we understand about this area is it's often this is the key bit for actually helping people start to actually repair the physical side of their relationship as well. It's actually by starting with this, starting with who they are as a person and how they see themselves, and then that actually helps to contribute to then maybe looking at ways of exploring things physically with their partners, or if they are single, actually starting to think about ways that they actually might start a new relationship, and you know, how they might communicate that to a new partner, that they might be dating, when to do that, and all those kind of things. And so that confidence, actually looking at the self-esteem and the confidence first, often actually helps those steps come along as well. So what is sensuality? It's how we look, it's how we feel, it's what we do, it's what we think about. It's what makes us feel good. It might be about the way we dress, the places we go out, the perfume that we wear, how we relate to others. So that might just be in general relating, or it might be in intimacy. You know, what we certainly know, and this may be your experience, often intimacy and sex get entwined somehow. People forget that they're actually quite separate. Well, not separate, but they can be together, but they can be apart as well. So, and intimacy is actually our strongest drive. You know, it's actually not sex for most people. It's actually wanting to be intimate is actually our strongest drive. And so that can look like anything. It could be holding hands. It could be going on a date night. It could be, you know, hugs. Or it could be one of the beautiful stories from work. A husband and wife, they used to breathe together. That was their intimate moment. It was every morning for 5 minutes they held each other in their arms and breathed deeply together. And she said it was just so powerful, and that to them was, you know, wonderful, and that's how they connected. So it's a lot of things. I wanted to show you sort of a video, and I do this just as an example of how a relationship, just the breadth of a relationship. And this is an elderly couple who are talking about their relationship before he dies. And it's all done in animation, but the actual voice is their real interview. And I'll chat with you about it afterwards. But yeah, just sit back and obviously I'm a bit tired actually. Oh, that's right. It needs a. That's alright. That's okay, it just needs a different level of Adobe to play. So, but just to tell you, I guess, a little bit about it, and if you do ever want to look it up, it's worth Googling. They're talking about sort of how they connect as a couple, and that it's. He writes her a love letter every day. Basically, and that's why it's called the weather report, because it's not a usual love letter. Every day she gets up and there's a note on the table. They've been married for 27 years. There's a note on the table that just says, the weather is this today, I'll call you at 11, and I love you. And it's just a really delightful way of example of the ways that people can connect. It's a little bit of a tearjerker, but it's really worth watching. So it really examples how sometimes we miss the simplicity of what we can actually do to reconnect with people that we love, whether we're in a relationship or whether we're not. It might just be reconnecting with people around us, our friends and family. That sometimes we put a lot of pressure on ourselves that it's meant to be something, you know, it's meant to look like this, and often, you know, a cancer diagnosis and the treatment may have taken that away, what that actually looks like, and it doesn't actually look the same as that. And so it's that permission to come back to the simplicity of what might work and exploring other options. And so we're going to go through a few tips and things about that. So this is a lot of the questions often that come up for people when they're looking to, you know, either become physical again with their partners, or just looking about what's going on for them. Will the partner still be attracted? Will it hurt for having sex? Will I be able to do the things that I used to do? Will I feel anything? You know, for a lot of women who might have had gynae surgery or breast surgery, actually, can get altered sensations. You know, they may not get the same arousal that they used to get when their breasts are touched, or there may be effects when a woman's uterus is removed, that when she goes to orgasm, that it can actually feel different. It's still there, but it feels different because not all the muscles are there to contract. So people can experience different sensations after treatment. How do others cope? how do I connect with other people who are walking through this situation? How do I build my confidence? How do I tell a new partner, as we discussed, as well? And just on that too, you know, that's for anyone who's single in the room, entirely up to you, you know, how and when you might do that, tell a partner. And also if a relationship doesn't work, it's also being able to put that through a lens of, well, not to necessarily think that that's actually related to the cancer, you know, because relationships don't work for lots of other reasons as well. So there's a lot of grace, I think, and kindness that you need to be able to give yourself when you're exploring these issues as well. I put this in there, it makes me laugh, sorry to the men in the room, and I know that this is not necessarily a true reflection of, it's that real picture of, you know, we're both different, men and women obviously very different, and, you know, there are lots of areas and ways that we can explore our sexuality that don't necessarily have to end in intercourse, or don't even necessarily have to be set up to end in intercourse, you know. It might be, you know, just an exploring of the erogenous zones or whatever it might be, and we'll go through a few more tips on that as well. And also that sense that we're not necessarily always on the same page either. And so as we go through, this is a huge one, is communication. It's just communicate. I can't sort of say that enough. It's being honest with yourselves, like actually being able to say, what is it about my sexuality that I'm not comfortable with, or what am I comfortable with? You know, because sometimes it can be, we know from the literature, sometimes it can be so overwhelming that we tend to focus on what either isn't there anymore or doesn't work properly anymore, or and so that can be quite overwhelming. So sometimes it's that opportunity to actually think, well, what does work? What do I have? What's different? What's new? What way do I want to explore that? And if you do have a partner, being able to communicate that together is huge, huge. And being, again, giving each other permission to really talk it through is a huge thing. And you will, hear some, that we did have one story where a wife actually said she absolutely hated it when her husband nibbled on her ear. And that was his way of foreplay, always nibbled on her ear. She sort of drove her nuts. And a man said to her, oh, did you tell him? She said, oh, absolutely not. She said, I just do it. And then, you know, it's over after the first 10 seconds and we can get on with other things. So, but actually knowing what each other likes, don't like, and being prepared for surprises in that as well. There needs, you know, to give that permission so that, because sometimes you will get reactions that you're not expecting, or you'll hear things that you weren't expecting, or, so there's a lot of grace and permission, you know, sort of to do that. So exploring sexuality can be done in so many ways, and you might have ways that you want to share with the group as well. Massage, I brought along a brand called Kama Sutra, of course. But it's a massage oil, but it's lickable as well. So, you know, you can actually use it as a massage oil, and then if you're feeling adventurous, you can get your partner to lick it off. So I'm going to send that around too, just so you can get a feel of these products. And these are all available at a place called Passion Fruit Sexuality Shop. And there's some flyers down the back about Passion Fruit. But if you don't feel comfortable to go in there, it's fantastically set up. Just to let you know, it's when you go in, it doesn't look like your, you know, triple X, battle X kind of shop where most people hate going near them. When you walk in, it just looks like any other shop, really, and they've actually set it up so that at the back there's a red velvet curtain, and it's behind there that all the toys and things like that. So people don't have to feel like they have to be confronted by vibrators or things like that. They can actually go in there and just explore and see what's there. So I highly recommend that. But massage is a great way of connecting, and either with a partner, or it can actually be that exploration for people who don't have a partner as well, is actually to touch their own body to actually find, well, what works? What makes me feel great when that's touched, or that doesn't make me feel so great, or that's changed from the treatment or whatever it might be. So then if they do want to start a relationship with a new partner, they're familiar with, you know, what they know works for them or what doesn't. And so there's a confidence that kind of comes with that, knowing your own body as well. Warm baths can be great. There's actually on the passion fruit, just to say as well, if you don't feel comfortable going into a shop like Passion Fruit, it's all available. That Passion Fruit, you can go actually log on to their website as well, so get it sent to the home instead. But to say that, you know, there's a vibrator that you can use in the bath. There's all kinds of, as I said, there's toys for everything. You know, so some people that might be the way, you know, they might just shut the door, put the candles, light the candles, get in the bath, and that's part of their way of rediscovering what it means to be sexual for them. Lighting different textures, and sex is fun. I think, again, it's that pressure that we often comes at us from, you know, as showed in those images at the beginning, it comes at us, these expectations of what, you know, sex can be, or what it used to be in our relationships. So being able to sort of step back from that and go, okay, you know, and there might be a brief process in that, saying, you know, the relationship actually isn't, or the things that we used to do we can't do anymore, and there might be a grief with that, and that's okay. But also remembering that sex can be fun. And one of my favourite quotes from Doreen, who used to teach us all about sex at Cancer Council, was no one's getting examined on it. You're not actually signing a test or doing it, you know. If it doesn't work, that's okay. It's actually the play, you know, chat with each other, play, see what actually works. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. Yeah, no one's getting examined. So yeah, and as I said, communication, big, really important element of it. Actually, you know, putting those boundaries in, I guess, too, you know, there might be times that you don't want to talk about it, but actually, again, it's that being open about that. So, you know what, I don't actually want to go there today, or, but then giving sort of options as well. It's like, you know what, maybe we'll talk about this tomorrow, or if you're suffering from fatigue, you might say, you know what, the best time of the day for me is the mornings, or it might be the afternoons, or whatever. So set those times for either chatting about or actually doing things together. So it's, there's sort of some planning that comes around that as well. Making a list of 10 things you enjoy doing can be fantastic. One of the examples we had was and you could do this as a single person as well, is that you had another person or your partner actually write down a list of all kinds of really cool things to do. And then in this situation, it was actually a couple, and they had it up on the mantelpiece. And there was a his and a hers jar. And every week, the partner would go and take something out of... So the male partner went and took something out of the her jar, and she went and took something out of his jar. And they did whatever it was on, you know, on the list. So putting that fun back in, being playful about it, is great. And hot dates with yourself. You know, it doesn't have to, again, for single people, it doesn't actually have to be with a partner. Or if you do have a partner, actually setting up hot dates. I did bring some examples, and you're more than welcome to look at these, of books and things like that. But things that you can get at the sensuality shop are these cards that have all kinds of fancy fun things to do. I'll let you have a look at them later. It's called the Super Hot Sex Deck. But it's actually a real mix of things that people... And so some couples choose to actually have this and pull out a card once every... whenever they've decided they want to do that. And so it's fun, it's spontaneous, and, you know, they kind of can run with that. So there's a lot of playfulness. There's also books up here on massage and so on. There's books on sex for one. What is it to actually explore as a single person sexuality as well? And there's a fantastic book called The Elusive Orgasm, which is a woman's guide to why she can't orgasm and how she can. I highly recommend this book. It's written, I guess, yes, it's written for women, but it's actually written for their partners in mind as well, and there's some really good practical tips in here. But it talks a lot about re-exploring sexuality, what kind of blocks they might have there towards their own sexuality. But sometimes, even prior to a cancer diagnosis, people can carry issues around their sexuality. You know, they might have been brought up in a very strict religious environment, for example, where absolutely masturbation was not even it was not permitted, or sex before marriage was not permitted, things like that. So there's it really sort of guides people through maybe breaking down some of the things that block them from exploring their sexuality. And then it also gives practical tips for how to rediscover the body and rediscover a relationship. So that's available online. It's a really, really good resource. So just to let you know that that's there. Some of the common myths that can be talking about blocks around sex is that some people believe that having sex or masturbating will make the cancer worse. So that's a common myth, but it's absolutely not true. So you can't catch cancer through having sex. That's a really common myth, particularly in different cultures, actually. Again, you're not radioactive after having cancer treatment. And as I said, starting to feel sexual after a cancer diagnosis and treatment takes time and it takes a lot of patience. And the fun side of it is it takes a lot of practice. So, you know, it's actually making time to actually do it, to, you know, whether that's with a partner or, and by do it, I don't mean sex, I mean exploring that sexuality and actually, you know, celebrating the fact that there actually isn't any harm in having fun and a good time. Sometimes people feel guilty about, wanting to have fun, wanting to feel good about themselves, and there is absolutely no harm in that at all. So getting in the mood, very aware that it's often the physical side of things can be really challenging for people, and so either from scars or sometimes after surgery for gynae cancer, women might have a colostomy bag if their bowel's been involved or things like that. So it's taking time to, get comfortable with that, but also explore ways of, possibly working with that as well. So, for example, for some women who have a scar across their abdomen, they might not be comfortable actually showing that. So, again, there's nice lingerie. I bought these long, which have got the base taken out of them, so they can actually be worn during sex as well. So for women who don't yet feel comfortable with their scar or may not, they prefer to actually keep it covered. There's some fantastic lingerie that you can actually buy for that situation as well. Having a go yourself, so that self-exploration. Working out what feels good for you. Trying fantasy, sex toys, the lubrication. Some people feel more comfortable with the sex toys than others, and that's okay as well. It's the same, with these kind of things. Some people will feel not comfortable with the images, and that's okay. And so a lot of books around cancer and sexuality, if people are needing to try different positions in sex because of the surgery that they've had, or that vaginal dryness, or whatever it might be. For example, the Sexuality and Cancer book, the images in that about sex positions are all hand-drawn. So, sometimes people aren't comfortable looking at sort of photos of things like that, and that's okay, it's whatever you're comfortable with as well. So, and I did bring along a couple of examples of sort of sex toys. I didn't bring along the vibrator that we keep. Well, that sounds really dodgy, doesn't it? Vibrator that we keep. But we do have one, but sometimes it can be a little bit, daunting. So this is an example of a small vibrator that is actually designed. It can be used singly, so a person on their own, or it can be used as a couple as well. I'm assured this actually works as a couple as well. And so one just sits, it sits into the vagina, the lower part, and that sits on the clitoris for the woman. And it's actually got just a really gentle vibration with that. So it can actually be used on your own or actually with your partner as well. So I'll pass that around so people can have a bit of a look at that. Sorry, the batteries aren't charged on that one. It takes the fun out of it, doesn't it? This one they are charged on. So this again is just a really small vibrator, because the thing too for some women who have had surgery or do experience dryness may not actually be able to use anything particularly large, so this is quite small, and you can actually alter the vibration, the intensity on it, because that's the other thing. Sometimes women are sensitive in that area post their treatment and so on, so you can actually adjust the so I'll set that one around as well. The other thing too, in terms of positions and things like that, for some women who have had a vaginal shortening or treatment that it makes it painful for sex, may not be able to tolerate sort of that deep penetration. So one of the tips that came through to us on the helpline was a woman who had a shortened vagina, and she struggled with pain because of her partner, when they were having sex, the penetration was too deep. They actually worked out, they got a piece of foam and cut a hole in it and were able to put that on his penis, which then actually shortened the penetration. So there's really practical tips. People are amazing when they ring the helpline and say, well, this is how we worked it out. This is how you solve that problem. We had another lady who had her vulva, her labia removed from her cancer, and had the difficulty of when she urinated, it went everywhere because she had no structural. And so for her, that was just a huge confrontation to who she felt like as a woman. She wasn't able to go out. She felt really isolated, and it was awful. This again is that partnership of, we had somebody else who volunteered for us who had had that same surgery. And she said, oh, that's exactly what used to happen to me. And she said, what I worked out was I bought one of those funnels from Bunnings. And she said she took that with her everywhere. And when she went to the toilet, she used that funnel, channeled the urine down into the toilet. That was it. She never had any issues. And just that partnership, as I said before, of being able to talk with someone who's been through it is so crucial. And those sharing those tips, changed her life, basically, being able to do that. So, there's lots of sort of toys out there that are subtle, some are not so subtle. There's lots of things that can be used. And again, it's that sense of play as well. So, and as I mentioned, the Elusive Orgasm is a great, great book. And the Sexuality and Cancer book is also excellent. And I discovered a new resource while I was presenting, working through this presentation, called Sexuality, Intimacy and Cancer. And the link is at the end of the presentation. But I have to say, the tips in here are fantastic. It's really, really well written, and you can just download it off the internet. And some of the tips in there's tips for everything. Looking through being mindful about who we are as people and how to sort of get back in touch with the self, right through to practical, really practical tips around intimacy, sex. It's fantastic. Oh, it's called Sexuality, Intimacy and Cancer, a self-help guide for people with cancer and their partners. And it was done by 5 organisations in New South Wales, put it together, and it's really, really good. I thought I'd just quickly touch on this too, just in case people are on medications. Sometimes some of the medications people are taking actually affect your desire towards sex as well, so it's good to be aware of that. For example, if you're taking antidepressants or things of that nature, that can actually sort of lower people's libido. So it's good to know that about the things that you're taking, just so that because there can be a level of frustration when things don't seem to be working, and so it's good to actually know that, so that you can actually recognise that, well, maybe this actually won't happen for that reason, so maybe I need to explore some other options. And sometimes people experience pain, you know, from their treatment or from their surgery. And so some of the tips around that is you can take pain, you know, medications 30 minutes. You might have a planned date with your partner, or you might have a planned date with yourself to masturbate or whatever that might be. And so you can take that pain medication 30 minutes prior. So thinking of some of those practical tips as well. Of course, we are anti-smoking, but also to say, you know, smoking and alcohol can actually increase sexual problems. Alcohol particularly can lower your libido and lower your capacity to actually have an orgasm, to sort of feel charged in a sexual setting. So, and some people, you know, they might have issues with pain, which therefore actually makes all the muscles contract when they're in, you know, sort of in the lead up to sex or actually during sex. So muscle relaxants can be very helpful in that setting as well. And again, it's that encouraging that exploration. You know, as couples, you might say, well, we're just going to actually explore each other. Some couples like to actually mutually self-pleasure with each other because they don't want to actually have intercourse. One partner might actually not feel like they want to do that, but there's a negotiation saying, well, I'm not in the mood, but, you know, is there something I can do for you that, you know, will be satisfying to both you and myself? Or so lots of negotiation goes on to, exploring. And, you know, part of that negotiation might be that we're going to do this together, knowing that we're deliberately putting it that it's not going to actually end in intercourse. So, you know, there's, yeah, lots of conversations to be had. I love this picture because it reminds that being playful and sexual and sensual is for any age. So, yeah, it's important that, you know, the message is there for everybody. Learning that self-confidence. Yeah, it's finding that space to be less critical of yourself, which can be hard to do. And it can be a conversation that sometimes needs to be had with a counsellor or with a cancer nurse or whatever it might be to actually help with some of the ways of doing that. Acknowledging that some things are beyond control. We often put a lot of energy into things that actually can't be changed, as opposed to putting energy into ways that we can actually think, well, that can't be changed. So I'm going to put all that energy into what can I actually do, what can I actually explore about myself or whatever that might look like. Building a good support system. It doesn't all have to sort of be an intimate relationship. It can be great friends. It can be going out for movies. It can be you know, taking yourself on a date, whatever that might be, and allowing yourself to be accepted and nurtured as well can be a really important part of rebuilding confidence. We often, you know, we know that we often sort of push help away sometimes, but it actually can be really helpful to actually allow people to nurture you and to actually provide you with help, which then in turn can actually relieve stresses often, which then might make you feel like you've got more time to actually explore about yourself, your sensuality and sexuality. And just to highlight, you know, people in relationships can still feel lonely. It's not, you know, it's not a given that when someone's in a relationship that it's amazing. So cultivating personal relationships, again, just as I mentioned, you know, cultivating supportive relationships can actually reduce stress. And then reducing stress can then actually give you space to feel, as I said, like you can have more time to look at sort of sensuality and sexuality and what that might mean for you. And also, often by reducing stress, we know that then it often helps people with their, you know, desire for sex as well. So, and again, remembering to have fun is a big part of that. That developing self-awareness, listening to your body, watching for those signs that trigger signs for stress, knowing when it's time to sort of stop driving yourself. So it's a lot of mindfulness. I don't know whether people have heard that term bandied around, but there's a lot of thought that goes into that, being actually quite mindful about what you do on a day-to-day basis. What are the triggers that stress you out? how are the ways that you could actually manage around that as well. Exercise is a huge part of well-being. And it's, you know, there's a lot, energy makes energy, which is very true. So introducing exercise back into your life after treatment, it doesn't have to be running a 10-kilometre marathon. It can just be walks, you know, it can be walks with friends and stuff like that. So you're working on that, cultivating relationships. It helps combat fatigue, and what we certainly know that is it improves cancer survival. I don't know whether people are familiar with that. A lot of the research coming out now is that if you are able to get back into exercise after a cancer diagnosis, a lot of the information is in breast cancer at the moment, you can actually improve your, you can actually reduce your risk of recurrence, I should say, by up to 50%. It's, yeah, huge. The literature is really rolling out around, and they're really starting to see the same thing in lung cancer and prostate cancer and things like that. So exercise is so important. And as you might notice, a lot of these things, as you do them, naturally they're designed to improve your quality of life. And then as a part of that, sexuality and being able to focus on that also improves quality of life, and there's lots of evidence around that. And relaxation, whatever you do to relax, might be going to the movies, might be going for a massage, yoga, which I know that they run here, whatever that looks like for you, very important as well. And learning to set limits, avoiding those bad habits. So relaxation time, as I said, diet, being able to, you know, look at what you're eating. It's just, it's not about getting crazy about it, but just you know, looking at what is it I eat? Do I eat McDonald's all day, or do I actually get, you know, some veggies and fruit in there and things like that? It all works to get the body working well for you. Learning to say no is, you know, again, that's about that stress reduction, and also reducing the shoulds. As I mentioned before, we often place a lot of expectations on ourselves, or we feel other people's expectations on us. And so we think, I should be doing this, I should be doing that. It's replacing those and actually going, you know what, this is actually what I want instead. So, yeah, going out and having fun in the meadows, you know, if it requires a change of routine in your day, you know, putting that in there. It might not be every day, it might be once a week, you know, and it's, what I really encourage is breaking it down into those small things. What can I actually accomplish? So you don't feel like you're setting yourself up to fail as well. It's really important. So you might just say, you know, actually all I can actually do is I, once a week I can actually introduce movie time or date night, or I'm going to, once a week I'm going to make sure I have a bath. Not what you want to shower every day, but a relaxing bath is what I mean there, put the candles, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, so actually getting it into your routine, and you'll be surprised how quickly that then becomes a habit. And then that becomes, you know, an exploration of more things as well. So making it an okay topic is kind of touching on what I mentioned before, is it's really important to actually make it an okay topic for yourself first, is really crucial. And then if you are in a partnership, making it an okay topic together as well, so that that open conversation is there. Have a think about how has it really affected me as a woman. And if you don't, if you feel that that is really confronting, and that's okay as well, do it with somebody you trust. So, you know, it might be, you know, you call the helpline, or and in saying that, we do actually have a counselling service now that is staffed by trained sexual counsellors. If you do call that 13 11 20 number, we're able to book you in for an appointment with them, and they're fantastic. And so, but sometimes it can be hard to get those conversations started, even with yourself, let alone with a partner. So, so if you need help, it's there. So do feel free to call that 13 11 20 number. It's free, the service is free, and so it's available right across Victoria. So, so if you do need a hand with that, it's actually being able to say that's okay as well, and we're certainly here to help you. And as I said, the 13 11 20 number, so they're trained nurses, We can actually help you formulate questions to take to your own doctor if that's who you're more comfortable with. We've got reliable websites, resources, there's workshops, which I'll touch on actually in a moment as well. There's online communities, support groups, our Cancer Connect, which is our peer volunteer service, so we can connect you with people who've been in the same situation. And I just wanted to touch on this too, because what we also know is often all of that can be really difficult to look at if you're actually struggling with other things that are going on. Finances is a massive issue, often for people with a cancer diagnosis. About over 50% of people who are diagnosed with cancer will struggle financially in some way. So we now have a financial planning service through Cancer Council, and again, free. The counselling service, the WIG service, which is our new service, we can actually give you a WIG for free. So you can pop into Cancer Council up in Rathdown Street, just ring in, make an appointment, and you know, that's another way of helping people feel good about themselves, who they are and what they look like. When cancer changes your financial plans, as I mentioned, it's a big issue. We're actually coming up, we have a webinar for women with advanced cancer around that issue. So that is where everyone logs online together, and there's experts online in that chat as well talking about that issue. We have an internet support group, a new internet support group for women with gynecological cancer. So again, all of those practical things can actually be a block to even having the opportunity to think about what's going on for you as a person, about how you feel about yourself, because those stresses can really, you know, take the attention, basically. So sometimes it can be a matter of actually looking at what's going on for you in that area, and if that is actually the distraction. And we're more than willing to help. Again, having fun in the meadows. It's all about fun. Again, it's about, you know, no one's marking you. So get out there and play. And I really love this quote. You never get back to the normal before you have cancer. It's a series of evolutions evolving over time as a new person or as a different person. And allowing yourself the space to do that. And if you don't feel that that's something that you can allow yourself the space to do, and you feel like you need help to do that, that's what we're here for. Absolutely. And these are just some of the websites that I mentioned. You're more than welcome to write those down, or what I'm hoping to do is actually get a copy of this presentation to Brecan. But there's a lot of great information on the internet, but of course it can be overwhelming as well. There can be some terrible information on the internet as well. So we are there to guide you with that, to point you in the right direction. This is a web, just I wanted to pop this up here too, as talking before about that comfort of what people are wearing, clothes that may actually help with getting that positive body image, particularly if a woman has scars or changes to the body for treatment. This Shop Well With You is actually a not-for-profit organisation, but that's exactly what they're set up to do, is for women who want to learn how to dress in a way that makes them feel good after their treatment. So it's worth visiting that website as well. And I would like to highlight this DVD. This is actually downloadable on the internet, Cancer and Sexuality. It's actually done by the Western Australian Cancer Council. It's a series of interviews with both health professionals, people who've had a cancer diagnosis, sex therapists. There's some fantastic information on it. It's so worth actually going to the Western Australian Cancer Council website and actually playing some of the interviews, because they're really good. And they actually have a series of DVDs. So they actually have one on exercise too, as I mentioned before. They have one on relaxation. So it's really worth actually going to that. And that one in the middle there is actually that booklet that I mentioned before that you can download. And the Jean Hales for Women's Health. I don't know whether anyone's actually heard of that. Yeah, they have some awesome information on menopause, vaginal dryness, a lot of those sort of tricks as well. That's worth visiting too. So that's it for me.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can subscribe to Brecan podcasts or browse existing podcasts by visiting www.brecan.org.au.